Hello and welcome to the Fishing Guide Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Weekman. Chris Johnson is in the house. He was nice enough to hang around after last show, and we were visiting, and he said, I have to tell you what has happened since I won the Invitational over there. It was the 2024 Bass National Qualifier on the Arkansas River, and so he is... Maybe he has changed his ways, maybe not.
No.
But he's going to tell us, because a lot of people have been asking you questions on, still are asking you questions on how you fish and how you fish a tournament without using all the electronics.
Yes. A lot of people have, that's been a kind of a big buzz of how it could even be done.
Right.
It's been really nice talking about some of the old ways of fishing. You know, it's how I grew up fishing and, you know, understanding natural cycles and fish behavior and habitat and lake levels and all this other stuff that you got to put together to figure out how to catch a few fish. But it's been really great getting to talk about it a lot too, because it seems to be a little bit of a lost art.
And they kind of have a tendency to just want to talk about lures, or did they want to talk about, or do they actually get wise and they want to talk about fish behavior and look, that's the reason why the location is, but
yeah,
everyone thinks it's a lure that seals the deal, don't they? You have a lure company, tell 100%. Them what lure. No.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a lot of people are looking for just a lure. They're hoping that the magic, the silver bullet that's going to get it. You know, I chuck that thing out there and it's going to catch a fish. And it's just not that way. You know, I hate to say it, but it's not. But truthfully, I've seen through all of this that there's a lot of people, they want to know. They want to know, they want to understand the whys. They want to understand what to do and learn this way of fishing. So I've had a lot that are really interested in that stuff. And I get a lot of comments about it, usually talking about those things. And a lot that's going, oh, wow, I never even thought about that, you know. So
yeah. What happens when you get in your boat? It's before you get in your boat and before you make your first cast. How do you go about let's not say a tournament. Yeah, you could say tournament day, but a day out fishing. What's the pre-fishing like?
So I will tell you, I have, through the last few years, I've changed my pre-fishing some. Uh-huh. And I'll try to preface this a little bit. I used to kind of pre-fish like a lot of the guys. I wanted to go catch a lot. Hey, get on some fish, catch them. I'm on them. And then it just trashes on me in the tournament. So over the years, I've gotten a little more. But for me nowadays, if I'm going just fishing and I want to catch some fish, I'm going to start out, and I still use a lot of old topographical type maps. So if I'm going to go to that lake, I'm going to think about the season of the year when I'm going, whether it's spring, summer, winter, fall. I'm going to determine the area of the lake I'm going to try to put in on. And then I'm going to begin to look around those areas on the topographical map for channels, ditches, any flats, whatever I think I need for that type of season, where those areas are at. I'm also going to pay a lot of attention to where the channels are at, where I can navigate, where there's timber, where there's all those things that map will tell me. Once I spend some time looking at that map, if not at the same time, I'm going to say I'm a no-tech guy, but I'm going to pull up my laptop right there and I'm going to go to Google Earth, and then I'm going to use the history. I'm going to start looking at the areas that I've looked at on this topo map and go and reference it to my Google Earth and what's really there. You know, is it rock? Is it mud? And break all that down. And that's what it, before I ever make a cast, before I've ever been to any body of water, I will go through that process, probably have a pretty good idea where I want to begin fishing that day. And then I will head to the water. And for me, hardly ever, I will put my boat in. I put my trolling motor down. I'll have a handful of bass I think I need for that season, and I take off fishing and just take off. And I might be on the trolling motor for 2 hours before I've ever got on plane, before I've ran to any area, or if there's a bay or something, you know, whatever's reasonably close, and I get to fishing. Because what I want to do is I want to get a bite on something. And I'm going to start alternating through the baits that I have laid out for that season or fish I'm targeting until I get a bite. Now, once I get a bite and I understand whether I, you know, if it was spring and I caught that thing off the end of a small secondary point or the bush on the end of it, I'm going to start paying attention. I'm going to start looking, thinking about that topographical map, thinking about that Google Earth and go, hey, there's another one of them little points right around the corner here. Old school pattern fishing. And then if I go to that next point, we can catch one there. I now know that entire area of the lake, more than likely, I can run with that and get bites. And then I'm just going to keep working through that process, looking for alternatives to that, that can I catch them on a, you know, let's say conditions change or the lake begins to fall, what's adjacent, so that when I go into a tournament or the next day fishing, if those little secondary points without bushes don't start working, what's the next thing I'm going to turn to? And then let that play out. So that's how I go about it. It probably sounds extremely complicated, but it's really quite an easy process.
Drop your trolling motor down. So you had talked about before when you had caught those fish and you burned those fish up before the days of the tournament. Do you have some tricks now that you do, or is it just – it's just like you have something written on the back of your hand say, Chris, do not catch all your keepers.
Yeah.
Because it's hard out there fishing. And that the weekend guys that only get to fish on the weekend, their tournaments, and on Friday they go and they pre-practice and they have 18 pounds. And then the next day when they get that you won the pre-tournament check with all the zeros.
Yep.
And it's only zeros.
Starts with a zero and ends with a zero. I've gotten quite a few of those, and they don't pay well. But I look at it a little different. I do need to catch a few fish.
Right.
But like that first little bit, if I can get a few bites and start establishing, and then certain lakes, you know, in a tournament scenario, you've got to determine the quality of fish that you need to catch. You know, some of my earliest tournaments, I ever went to Kentucky Lake. Being from here on Beaver, I get out there and I start catching some 3-pounders. I'm golden, you know. Right. Well, ends up 3-pounders. You can catch all them you want on Kentucky Lake back then, and you were going to get checked with zeros on it, you know.
Right.
So I want to catch a few. I want to get a few bites and understand what's going on. But then I do a lot of not fishing. I do a lot more trolling around, looking for more areas that I think are the right thing. And I spend more time after that going in and out of just, it's almost like people that bed fished in the spring and you see them just trolling around.
Uh-huh.
I'll start trolling around, just looking and going that right there, that there'll be a bass right there. Don't fish it, but just letting my instinct go, there's a bass there. I can catch one there on tournament day and just leave him alone. And so many times nowadays in tournaments, I'm catching fish off places that I've never made a cast or that I may even looked at on that day and went, ooh, we need to go over there and catch.
Right.
And so you're kind of letting that flow just from a little bit of good information and understanding bass behavior, because once you catch them, you just can't hardly catch them again the next day. And the other thing that happens a lot in tournaments, and I learned this from a video with Gary Klein. Anytime you're on a bite, you got to look at that and go, if you're really on a bite, it's fading. So if you're catching them good, you're at the peak. It can't go anywhere else but down. And if you're, you want to be on the front side of any kind of pattern fishing. So you want to be catching the first couple and going, hey, this is just starting to happen.
Right.
And then progressively work into that. And that's when you can have some of the days of your life as you're, instead of being at the peak of it, knowing this is ending. And it has been a valuable lesson to me over the years.
And so, you know, if you don't know who Chris Johnson is, he's the one that showed up with an older Ranger boat that just has a flasher in the front and a temperature gauge.
Yep.
And then you have just a real basic electronics at the dash.
Yep.
And then that's, so when he's saying that he's going out there and marking areas and trolling around, he doesn't have live scope, you know, on the back of his boat and in the front. And so he's very, very traditional method of fishing. So
yes,
when you're looking, you're still using maps, and it's still that importance of waypointing, you know, the certain spots. But when you talk about shallow, or you talk about fishing without electronics, that's just not shallow. Like, you fall out of the boat and then you stand up and you're only wet up to your knees.
I'm knee deep here.
Yeah. Because you also, I'm sure you use jerk baits and things like that. Those are by like in Ozark Highland Reservoirs, you could be deep.
Yes.
In very deep water.
Yes.
And still fishing. How, like, because they're using their electronics to have the confidence of throwing it in the right area. You're using a flasher, so that's a 20 degree cone that goes out. So you're in like 4 or 5 foot of water and 20 foot of water. So that really doesn't play. It's not a visual game to that. How do you explain to people how you catch fish when you're fishing areas like that, or jerk baits, or.
So for me, it goes back to kind of like the topographical study. And it's a study of the land and the shape of the land. So any reservoir, lake, or that I would go to, a river, I'm paying attention to the hillsides and everything around that. So I want to understand how the land works. So now that I've looked at a topo map, and when you can read a topo map and see a break, you know, your lines are wider and then they get tighter together, you know there's a break there. And so let's say jerkbait fishing, and I learned how to fish by triangulating. So I may go out there and look around a little bit and go, hey, there's this long point comes out here. The map shows off this side of that point, there's a nice break. And I'm going to kind of triangulate where I feel like that break is at. And you can, by studying your topo map before you get there, you can realize if the lake's at a certain level, that if I'm off the edge of that break, I need to be in 22 feet. Well, I now know that on my flasher up there on the front, which I was really just going to give me depth. If I'm in 22 feet and I'm throwing up across that point, I will be coming across that break. And lining up on it and fishing that way, really by paying attention to depth changes. If I begin to see it getting shallow, I know I'm coming up on that. And that's just how I fish, whether it's ledges or anything, even if we're trying to do this type of thing.
Do you think that puts you more in tune with, say, like a jerkbait or something, because you're actually, your eyes are never shifting like down to the flasher. You're actually like, do you think that there's advantages to not looking at a box and fishing?
I think there are. I will say this. I think that if you just want to catch bass and the only thing you want to do is catch the fish,
right,
and that's all you're worried about, you don't want any other satisfaction other than catching the fish,
right,
you're probably better off just to look at your box and throw out there and catch him. I'll just say it like that. And I'm not a hater of the technology. Because you're not going to need to be, you're not going to have an understanding of how this point flows. You're not going to have an understanding of what the water looks like, or the color of the water, or really anything else.
Right.
All you need to know is there's fish out there. Where the way I fish, I feel like for me, and it's an intrinsic value of fishing and being in the outdoors, is I really want to be one with everything that's going on there.
Right.
I want to be in tune with the air temperature, the clouds and the wind, the water itself. And when you're paying attention to the depth of water you're setting in and where you are in relevance to an old pinpoint or hillside that comes down and where you're casting at, and you're paying attention, and all these senses are happening at once. There's a piece of you that's watching that depth finder saying, hey, I need to stay at 22 feet.
Yeah.
There's a piece of me that says I need to make an X length cast. I need to work it X amount of time before I'm going to work it pretty quick, but now I know I'm I've brought that bait 25 feet towards me. I now know I'm over the top of that break. I need to slow down. I need to really get right with that bait. And the next 15 feet is where I need to really pay attention to this cast and really be in tune with that. And in all that, you're still needing to stay right here. You're still needing to keep your boat where you're sitting at by looking at that oak tree and that house sitting there and where I'm sitting at. And all that's happening at once. And I think that's a magical thing. I'm in love with that part of fishing, and that's what fishing to me is.
Right.
And when you catch a bass like that, I think it's magical. I just go, man, right there he is. He's right where I knew he was going to be, you know. And just using jerk baiting for an example, I don't know how many bass I've caught where I'm like,
hundreds, my bait. Thousands, millions.
Yeah, like bunches. Like my bait's right where it needs to be. And I'm right where I need to be. And I just need to make one more little twitch and he's going to get it. Because I know my bait's right where it needs. Because I'm so in tune with everything about it. And then he gets it. It's the greatest thing in fishing that there can be, in my opinion. So,
In general, it's a way of, that's how you catch your fish.
Yes.
And that's how being in tune. I just wonder that because you're doing that, that doesn't elevate that shallow water bite. It falls into that more of that bite where you're seeing some of the things too. Like in some of the situations, maybe what do you think the percentage is when you're shallow water fishing that you see the object or the structure?
Oh,
90%,
80, that you're paying attention to something up there. You're seeing a stick or or even in clear water, you're seeing a dark spot that now, you know, that's deeper water right there, or you're visually looking at all those things and paying attention to the water. And I think one thing that, and it goes back to even my depth finders. A lot of people say I use my depth finder all the time in 5 feet and less. Because in shallow water, I truly believe a depth change in a foot of water is maybe more paramount than a depth change in 30 feet of water.
Right.
So if you look at, and for me, so I'm paying attention to all those things still, even water depth is, in my shallow fishing is probably as paramount as deep water. If I see a depression that on a flat and this flat's been 2 feet deep for 50 yards, and then I see a spot that goes off to a foot and a half deep, that's the spot. If there's a stick in that or a little bit of rock, that 6 inches or a foot break is the spot, and that's where that bass will be living. So you have to know that, where if you get out in deep water, that a foot and a half difference is probably pretty irrelevant.
So
I think all those things still really come together the shallower you get. And for me, being nowadays too, I think even more, being ultra stealthy, being quiet.
Right.
It's kind of like hunting. You're creeping along. You're wanting to make precision casts without disrupting the area.
Right.
And that's just how I fish. And I try to.
And you're not using the White Johnson trolling motor. Remember those White Johnson? Or were they Evinrudes? Remember the white ones that had white chef, white head,
yeah,
their little box things, you know, they're real kink, like they were kinked way out to bring the boat. You worked on boats for a while,
did.
You probably saw some of those.
Yeah. But, I worked on many of them.
Your trolling motor's up to date, is it not?
No.
Really?
I'm going to say it's up to date. It's a Minn Kota Fortrex, but I don't have any spot lock or anything like that.
You don't have spot lock?
No.
Anchor lock?
No,
none of that?
No. I have to use my foot and hold myself in spot.
That's
if the wind's blowing, Chris has to hold it there. And no, I don't have any of that. Now, I've contemplated it. You know, Lucy's like, I think you ought to get one with that. And I'm like, well, I don't know if I should or not.
You know? I think you should get one on that so that when you can tie your knots and not go out of your spot, and then you have to start your engine up and then
go back
up to that spot.
It would be
kind of
handy.
Drift into shore or something like that. Maybe mostly because some of the newer trolling motors are more energy efficient.
Yes.
Are you using lithium batteries?
I am not. I still got lead acid regular batteries.
See?
Everything I got is old. I have considered.
They're
I,
not Everstart lead acid batteries, are they? Because I don't think they sell Everstart.
They're so not you don't know it. But they come from an old battery store down there in Fayetteville at Bond's Battery. They're plain Jane lead acid. You got to check the water.
Dude, I bought one of those, a starting battery from Vaughn. And yep. I don't know them from Adam, but I bought one of those and that thing lasted like 7 years.
Yep.
I'm like, where did this thing come from? This was before lithium batteries. It lasted longer than any lithium yep. battery on this.
Yep.
And then I had a bunch of electronics because I was just playing around with them and writing articles about it, and they'd send me some, and I'd put like three of them up front before it was cool to have three. And yeah. I'd have them all up there, and I'd be like, well, there's like, okay, well, we're just doing articles and I need screen captures. So I need this. And so, and then I would just get, you know, I go back to one.
Yeah.
And so I do have to claim that I have two okay. up front. But
oh, I got you.
I think yeah. if you crappie fish and you like to catch big crappie.
Yeah.
If you really like big crappie, but I'm still from just like you, the old school that hearing the sounds and being out in nature and whether it's seeing a stump or not seeing a stump. I mean, I fished offshore for stripers forever yeah. because yeah. when I stopped using live bait, that's all I had was that. And I went offshore and I used flashers and the lines.
Yeah.
I just looked at the lines. That's how I caught them. I yeah. didn't think anything was different. Yeah. Now what I figured out is those fish move fast. Extremely
they're getting out
fast.
Of your cone quick, you know.
Yeah. It's like an array. Those beams, those things, they go in and they go out. These stripers, especially because they're moving.
Oh, yeah.
They're moving yeah. fast, or those schools of whites. And it's like,
yeah,
well, it's cool, but I could still go back and still just use the regular ones just because that's what we did. And
it is.
I still think it's a little crazy that people are all up in arms about that.
Yeah.
The only thing I'd say is Aaron Martins, who everyone, you know, just adored and loved, and they yep. didn't think anything about him standing in the Great Lakes and fishing straight down with his graph and staring at a graph all day. No one said anything
Nobody.
About Aaron doing that.
Nobody.
Nobody. But yep. then all of a sudden someone else does it, it seems like, and then
it just
kind of goes that way. But we'll let it slide on that. But
yeah.
If you could give them one tip to shallow water fishing that you think is critical that they need to know or they need to work on, what would it be?
You know, one of the most valuable things to me on shallow water fishing is if you're going to, don't ever discount how shallow a fish will be. And I talked to a lot of guys and they'll be like, I could say, hey, I caught them shallow. And they'll be like, they thinking 3-5 feet. And
right.
I'm thinking, if I say I caught them shallow, their fins might have been sticking out of the water. You know, I mean, they're this deep.
Right.
And I think a lot of people discount how shallow bass go or all fish. And so many times they're missing those fish that are up there in that 0 to 1.5 feet of water.
Wow.
Trying to fish in a 2 feet to 5 feet, thinking that's shallow. You know, they're like, man, I caught them shallow. I've had some guys say, man, I caught them shallow today. I'm thinking, yeah, really? Yeah, man, 5-6 feet deep. I'm like, holy cow, that's deep. You know?
Deep. Are you at the dam?
Exactly. Wow. Yeah. So if you just don't discount how shallow they go, because,
right.
and I'm going to say in any water temperature, it's crazy how shallow a bass will be in 38 degree water temp,
right?
And it's amazing how shallow a bass will be in 98 degree water temp in inches of water and be 100% comfortable. So
yeah.
And I think a lot of those get missed, and I probably shouldn't tell anybody that.
we'll end on that, so I'll just cut that out. Nope.
Yeah.
Hey, that takes us to Tackle Time. Tackle Time sponsored by Pico Lures. Pico Lures has a complete line of hard and soft baits, some that you can fish in 38-degree water and some you can fish in 99-degree water. They have bass fishing stuff. They got crappie fishing stuff. They got hard tackle. They got soft tackle. They also have a line of tools and fishing equipment like pliers and clippers and fillet knives and you name it. They have a whole line of that. Bobber stops. Yep. So when you're Texas rigging and you wanna cinch your worm weight up next to your thing, he could do a whole show on that. How to fish a Texas rig. We should do that.
We ought to. That's another one of those lost arts, man. Yeah. I caught one fishbowl shows last night. I caught two really nice bass on a Texas rig and it still works.
There you go. You can see them at picolures.com. Chris, we talked a little bit about you having a YouTube channel, but like a lure company,
Arkansas Custom Tackle is a small company that me and my wife own, and we make a full line of spinner baits, buzz baits, jigs, just a whole array of things that we make. But really specialize in making spinner baits and buzz baits for the most part. And I one thing that we do a lot of is an old bucktail jig that you don't see around much, but it's an old school fish catcher. And we do a lot of those.
Really?
So, yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, if they wanted to purchase or find that stuff, where are they going
to
go?
You can go to our Facebook on Arkansas Custom Tackle on Facebook. Or you could reach out to, you could go to my YouTube. It's Aspiring Angler Chris Johnson and send me a message there if you're interested in something like that on one of the videos. I do quite a few videos on those old jigs and spinner baits. You can send me a message there too.
Aspiring Angler. Hey, when you get older, you know, hopefully you'll be at the Classic. Give us a heads up. So you made the Invitational. When do you get to go fish where all the guys who won the Invitationals and people that did good.
Yep. So everyone that qualified in the qualifiers and the states will be coming up. We'll be going to the Bass Nation National Championship on Grand Lake on November 6th through the 9th for hoping to earn a berth to the Bassmasters Classic. So top three go to the Classic there. They also earn some berths into the Opens and some other things that are really spectacular for aspiring anglers like myself. And
there you go.
So all that'll happen in November on Grand Lake.
And, in November.
Yeah, it should be wonderful.
You're going to have to come back before then so we can maybe get an update and maybe get some stuff. Do you know where Grand Lake is by chance?
I think I'll Google it and maybe try to learn my way around it a little bit. We'll see.
All right. Don't you live in Farmington?
I do. Grand Lake's like my second lake, so I think I can find my way.
There you go. November, shallow water, yeah. November.
Somebody
could
throw a spinnerbait over there, maybe.
That's the opportunity and window is there. That, you know how awesome that would be? Is someone going to wrap your boat? You have to have your boat wrapped, I believe, for that event.
No, you don't.
You don't?
No. Don't. I've had an opportunity to get my boat wrapped, and I turned it down, actually. And
how about if you go to the Classic, the 2020? Five Classic. That'll be for the 2026, right?
Yeah, it would be the one coming up next spring.
Oh, really? 2025?
Yep. They're some of the nation qualifiers are the very last qualifiers for the Classic of the season. So it would be literally, if we could do that, you'd go to there in November, be going to the Classic next spring.
Wow. That's in Texas.
Yeah.
Now, Ray, at least it's somewhat close.
Yeah.
Ray Hubbard. Is that
I think
where
that's
going?
It. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
So you're not going to wrap it with the Fishing Guide Podcast on the side of your thing?
Probably not.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm really true to that old boat, and you know, such a long story around that too. We could go on about that, but it's gotten me so much having that old rig, and it's I'd hate to cover it up.
All right, there you go. That's how we're going to end the show. Make sure you keep your hook sharp and your lures in the water.